Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 29th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dale Durkholtz of AgriVisor Services. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the National Biodiesel Board is calling on Congress to close a tax break loophole. President Bush, speaking at the NCBA yesterday, continued to levy his veto threat upon an appropriations bill that contains disaster aid for farmers. And on the flip side of that note, relatively speaking, at the same event, he called on Congress to permanently repeal the estate tax. Dave Dickey will have complete details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, I'll tell you how we did during this morning's Power Hour of fundraising. Let's just say there are a lot of smiles around the station at the moment, and thanks if you happen to call in with a pledge of support between 7 and 8 o'clock a.m. Central Time. Oh, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour today, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt. He'll join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. If you would like the key numbers from tomorrow's planting intentions and quarterly grains and stocks reports delivered to you via email, go now to WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. And click on the subscribe to our newsletter link. When the email message opens, simply click send and you're subscribed. We'll send you the numbers shortly after they come out at 7:30 Central Time tomorrow morning.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
The numbers in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon finished the day like this. May soft red winter wheat at $4.61, up 4.5 cents. July futures at $4.75, up 3.75. And the wheat futures September contract at $4.85.5 were up 3 cents for the day. From the corn pit, May contract at $3.94.5, 6 higher. July futures at $4.05.5, up 5.25. And December corn at $4.03.5, up 2.75 today. Soy complex now, May beans, 7.5 cents higher in the nearby contract, 7.78 1/4 of the settlement price. July futures at 7.93 1/4. They were up 6.75. And November beans for the new crop at $8.20 a bushel, up 6.75 for the day. May bean meal futures at 218.60, up 30. May bean oil at 32.97, 56 higher. From the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished the March contract at 105.62.5. They were 32.5 cents higher. April futures at 96.37.5, up 20 cents. And June futures in the live cattle pit at 93.95, up 52.5. April lean hogs, $63.50 a hundredweight. They finished a dime higher. Crude oil trading the May futures at this hour at $66.12 a barrel, up $2.04. The CRB index at 317.78 stands at 3.41 higher for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 8307, or rather the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,307. That's up about 8 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange in tomorrow morning's big USDA reports, Dale Durkholtz of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Dale.
How you doing, Todd?
I'm very well. Okay, so you have been notoriously the most bullish folk that we've had on the air for quite some time for the corn pit. Where do you stand today?
Hard to tell.
Hard to tell? Oh, come on, Mount Pulaski. What's up with you?
What are you, we... you know, When you seriously look at this report, and I've been upfront and honest about this, too, with an awful lot of people, you look at the flurry of numbers that we've had out here. Some people are down at 8 million. That's still my bias, 8.5 million more acres of corn. You know, you got some people have been talking maybe as much as 12. But to be blunt, in this mix with this particular crop report, no one knows for sure. We don't have any good historical precedents to really work with here, and we're trying to deal with gauging the emotional implications of how everything that's unfolded this winter has affected the farmer, and that's just a terribly difficult thing to measure. We've had some good surveys out, or at least some reasonable surveys out, but, you know, those, for the most part, you know, at best, they're surveying maybe a couple thousand, maybe 2,500 people. The USDA will survey, as I remember, something over 80,000. So
that's correct.
You know, it's a lot of room for surveys to be misled, because you got a lot of room in a small sample to have a fairly big sampling bias. And so, this one I think is really difficult to forecast, extremely so. And I've said to some people here over the last couple of weeks, it's probably one of the most important reports we've had over the last 20 years.
So I'll ask again, just to be sure, where do you stand on the marketplace? I know you have been bullish. We've talked about
I still have a positive bias. I really do. But you know, I well understand going through this thing in the morning. Who knows?
A positive bias, but of course it could change tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it could, you know, and maybe even on Monday, depending upon weather, because basically a lot of my attitude has been structured into some things I expected to see off this acreage report and some concerns I have about weather. Even if we get some near-term bearishness, no, this market is far from being over, because we still have, no matter the acres we put in the ground, and I don't think it'll be more than 12, nor do I think it'll necessarily be more than 11. When you look at kind of demand numbers we're going to be needing for next year, we need every one of those acres, and we need a good yield to go with it. So we've still got a lot of yield and a lot of weather games to move through this year, too. So even if we'd have a market or a report that would be a little bearish and would turn this thing down, and downside risk to me is somewhere around 3.5 on nearby corn futures, I think you'll have an opportunity to sell something around 4 at a later date yet.
So your independent view says something just above 8 million extra acres for corn. A potential weather problem pushes things up above $5. Is that what you're still working with?
I'm still basically of that bias and attitude, and the performance of the market so far at this point hasn't done anything to really derail that attitude. If we break down because of this report and or because of weather, let's say early next week and we go down below 382, 380, something like that, then I could build an argument we go to 350. But from 350, I see the market having a rally again. So, you know, I'm not that over concerned if we have some near-term bearishness to deal with. It would potentially take away the opportunity to see a $5 price on corn, but it doesn't take away the opportunity to still see some very attractive prices.
Expectations for the quarterly grain stocks report on the corn?
Really just below the 6 billion bushel mark on that. That's also another one of those that you know, you're trying to gauge every time you have a quarterly stocks report on corn what kind of feed and residual you have, because we back into that figure to come up with that number. But I don't see any reason, looking at the livestock numbers we've had, looking at the weather that we've had, looking at the kind of weights that we've had until recent in the cattle anyway, to really think that we're going to do something really low in terms of feed consumption demand through the quarter we just moved through. So I still think that number is going to come in somewhere just underneath the 6 billion bushel mark.
How about on the soybean side with the quarterly grain stock?
I'm somewhere just under 1.8 billion. You know, it's still plenty of beans. You know, that's still somewhere around, what is it, about 100 million more roughly than what we had a year ago, maybe a little bit more than that. That's still a pretty good consumptive pace, but we started out the year with a fairly large supply to work with. You know, the stocks numbers tomorrow, they have some importance, the corn number in particular maybe, because corn's still the grain that's in the lead here. So if the corn stock's number is significantly a little higher than the trade expects or a little less than the trade expects, you know, that tends to, in people's minds, analysts' minds, add or subtract to what kind of ending stocks maybe we're going to be having in corn. But, you know, the big number tomorrow is corn plantings, period.
On the soy complex, is there any reason fundamentally that the recent rally should have legs under it, and can it continue given the proper numbers tomorrow?
I think in beans, you know, the acreage thing is something that has some importance because, you know, the trade's looking for something close to 6.5 million acres taken out, and, you know, on an average yield, you're talking about, 260, 270 million bushel. So, you know, you're talking about taking a pretty good chunk out by removing that many acres. So you automatically, in that regard, start to tighten up the scenario for next year. The bigger thing I'm a little concerned about with beans, more so than the acreage number at this point, because even if we take that many acres out, if we have a decent weather year, you can still have a decent crop on the other end and enough beans. So beans are still somewhat tied to corn in a competitive game here as far as meal in terms of feed demand base is concerned, but the acreage game will probably start to go away a little bit. But I think weather may be a bigger factor over the course of the next month, especially in what goes on in the bean market, than this particular acreage number is, because, you know, the market at this point, because it knows it needs the corn acres, if weather comes along and starts to at least threaten to slow down planting, boy, you know, you could have a corn market that's going to be strong and a bean market that could be weak, as the market just seeks to discourage producers from even thinking about diverting corn acres back over to soybeans if it starts to get a little late. So in this period here for the next month to 2 months, you know, weather is going to play a big part of how the beans relate to the corn market. Heretofore, over the last few months, it's been as corn has gone up, beans have gone up with it because of competitive pressures. Well, to a degree, those competitive pressures change now for about the next 30 to 60 days.
I want to bring you back to the corn just for a bit as we close out this segment and talk about demand from the ethanol sector and all sectors in particular. You mentioned that you're thinking somewhere just north of 8, but that we would need all of everything of maybe 11 or 12 million acres extra. Is the demand structure there? Is ethanol going to be have the capacity at that point to grind that much corn?
You know, when you look at it, we'll go back to where the USDA was at their outlook meeting, and basically they were coming up with a demand base for corn that was 12.3 billion bushel. And to be blunt, you know, I think they were a little, quote-unquote, light in terms of their ethanol number. I can add 300 to maybe 500 million onto their ethanol number. So I'm talking 12.5 billion, maybe 12.8. And, you know, you sit there and you look at it, you know, and you think about 12.8 billion bushel, and you take an average yield on this, that's saying, you know, you need to harvest somewhere around 82.5 million acres, roughly. And that would be somewhere close to maybe 90 million, 89 million planted. So, you know, you're basically sitting there going, I need somewhere in the vicinity at least of 11, maybe as much as 12 million acres to do that.
It'll be fun to watch tomorrow morning.
It's like I said, one of the biggest, and, you know, people thought the reactions around the January report were interesting. If this one even smells bullish, the market has a very short window in time to accomplish a very big feat, and that's to ensure that it gets the corn acres it needs. And that is also hoping that we don't have weather that impacts or slows down planting, too.
Dale, we appreciate you being with us.
Good talking to you.
Yep, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Thursday afternoon. He's in for the vacationing Dan Zwicker. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Mike Sola says across the two-state region tonight, it'll be mostly cloudy. A few scattered showers in the far western part of Illinois. Lows from 40 in northeastern Indiana. to 60 in southwestern Illinois. Dave Dick is here now to take a complete look at today's agricultural newscast.
In agricultural news, the National Biodiesel Board says U.S. lawmakers should close an export loophole that allows biodiesel sourced from other nations to qualify for a U.S. tax credit. NBB Chief Executive Officer Joe Joby says he has anecdotal evidence that biodiesel from Brazil and Malaysia is entering the European Union via shipment through the U.S., where it's being mixed with a drop of U.S. diesel in order to qualify for a $1 a gallon blending subsidy. The EU is proposing a countervailing duty be placed on biodiesel imports. President Bush told the National Cattlemen's Beef Association yesterday that he would veto either the House or Senate version of the Iraq War Supplemental Appropriations Bill if it contains agricultural spending.
For example, the bill includes $74 million for peanut storage, $25 million for spinach growers.
Bush did not mention the approximately $4 billion in weather-related disaster aid that is also a part of both the House and Senate appropriations, but Bush did point out some funding increases in USDA's Farm Bill proposal.
We asked for a $17 billion increase in conservation spending over a 10-year period. That's an increase over the last Farm Bill. That includes money for CRP and a 30% increase for EQIP.
Bush also called for Congress to permanently repeal the estate tax. Farm Service Agency officials say 28 states have submitted plans for consolidating their field offices. Illinois and Indiana have not yet submitted plans. Some federal lawmakers are unhappy with the recommendations, including Montana Democrat Max Baucus.
We are pretty clear to the USDA officials that their plan to close about 7 offices in Montana just does not make any sense. They'll get virtually no savings out of it. They'll inconvenience an awful lot of people. Compared with other states, frankly, we're doing a pretty good job. We have far fewer offices than some other states have. We're a much larger state. We have much greater geographic area. So we made it very clear that that they should go back to the drawing board, find a better way to do this, because their current plan makes no sense.
FSA officials say a few states are moving aggressively on consolidation. Nebraska announced earlier this week it would close offices in 12 counties. Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley says he has not thrown in the towel on a $250,000 hard cap on annual farm subsidies. Grassley withdrew an amendment earlier this month during Senate budget debate, but he says the bill will go to the Agriculture Committee.
That's a bill that soon Senator Dorgan and I are putting in. It's probably the one that we'll pursue in the Ag Committee. It will have three entity rule out. It will include certificates. And then on certificates, there's another way to tackle that, and that is I want to make sure that either through the Finance Committee or through the Ag Bill that we include 1099 reporting of income from certificates.
However, Grassley says he has not yet decided whether to exclude cotton, rice, and peanut growers from the farm subsidy cap proposal. U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab is heading to India next month to gauge whether officials there have softened their position on World Trade Organization negotiations. India, one of the world's largest agricultural producers, has been adamant about protecting its agricultural sector from foreign competition through high tariff walls. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at WILLAG.org. The most important button this week on that page is right up at the top. It says Pledge. By the way, thanks to everyone who helped make our Radio Power Hour this morning a really big success. We raised some $35,528 from 258 pledges this morning. So if you add the $35,000 in matching funds we already had in the bank, we made our goal. We were 8 pledges above where we wanted to be and $528 over the goal. That's $70,528 even. It's just the start. Your chance to get in on the action begins tomorrow afternoon and morning right here on the Ag Programming. Tune in and make sure you call in when Dave Dickey asks for that little pledge. We hope that it happens.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Hi, Todd.
How about the cash grain movement and basis in your area? Tell me about them for the last week.
Well, if you look over the past week, the corn basis has been weaker as we've gone through the week, and especially in the processor area and going into the, you know, the southwest feeder markets, it's dropped off some. We did see a little bit of strength today, though, in corn basis. Bean basis has been somewhat better, but it's, you know, it's going from not so bad to, or, you know, from bad to not so bad, I guess. It's the real story, I think, in the bean basis is new crop bean basis over there along the river. You've got some areas like around Burlington and that they're down 55 under for fall beans, which is just really quite a number, probably close to numbers we saw after the Katrina thing a couple of years ago. So,
is that because the crop has been pretty good in South America, or are there other reasons that are involved?
Well, I think it's I think there's just a lot of reasons. I think if you just kind of boil it down, I think the buyers have done a pretty good job of getting stuff bought here, and I think that there's no real desire to go out and chase this market from a basis standpoint at this level at this time anyhow.
What are your expectations for tomorrow morning?
Well, I guess I'm kind of in the camp with the rest of the trade around 9 to 10 million increase on corn acres. I do think if we get 9 to 10 million acre increase on corn, the decrease in bean acres would be greater than 6.3, which is what the average trade guess is. I think that might be where the surprise. I'm anxious to see the stocks. I think with bases where it's at right now, it's going to be interesting to see where the stocks come out if they're higher than people were expecting. But we'll know. We'll be a lot smarter tomorrow when I come over to work with you on the commodity week.
All right. What is your bid for the day?
Cash corn, 368. Beans, 733.
We appreciate it much.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks much. Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take time to talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast or regional newscast. Well, that one comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Attorney General Lisa Madigan wants state regulators to force Ameren's Illinois utilities to better detail its relationship with credit rating agencies. Yesterday, Madigan's office asked the State Commerce Commission to require Ameren to turn over to the AG any communications between the utility and the rating agencies. Madigan says recent moves by two agencies to downgrade and warn about Ameren's credit rating suggest they were done to promote the utility's interests. Ameren has seen its rating downgraded to junk status by one service as state lawmakers consider rolling back high electric rate increases. She says that raises troubling questions about whether those agencies are providing objective information about the utilities. Ameren spokesman Lee Morris said the company had no comment on Madigan's filing. A bill awaiting a final vote in the state Senate would make it easier for third-party and independent political candidates to get on the ballot. Senator Mike Frericks of Gifford, who himself faced a minor party candidate who withstood a petition challenge, says ballot access restrictions for candidates who aren't Republicans or Democrats should be the same as those who are. The Illinois Department of Revenue says it needs 60 new auditors, in part because of the new gross receipts tax proposed by Governor Blagojevich. The Revenue Department's asking state lawmakers for an extra $3 million next year to hire those auditors. Administrators say, on average, each auditor could bring in up to $500,000 in otherwise uncollected tax revenue. Champaign County's Big Small All Future Planning Project passes a major milestone tonight. Organizers will unveil a lengthy final report on the so-called visioning process. It includes action items to consider on ways to make the county more collaborative, prosperous, sustainable, supportive, and enriching. The director of the Big Small All Project says thousands of county residents began the effort with community brainstorming meetings in the fall of 2005. The Delta Zeta sorority is suing DePauw University over that school's decision to expel the organization from campus last month. Delta Zeta is accused of evicting members based on appearance and popularity. The federal suit alleges DePauw had broken promises and contractual agreements. It seeks unspecified damages. Delta Zeta's return to DePauw and a retraction of certain statements. An attorney for the sorority says it hopes it can reach an out-of-court settlement with DePauw, which is a private school between Indianapolis and Terre Haute. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to WILL. We're joined now by Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, and he'll help us take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of weather. Hi, how are you doing this afternoon, Pete?
Just fine, Todd. Let's get into the weather. A lot of it to talk about, in a way. We've had this relatively wet week across the Midwestern states, and providing abundant moisture, maybe a little excess, for almost everybody in the main soy and corn areas of the Midwest and the western and the upper plains. And now we're going to see another weather system come across. However, it's really going to be split in two. There's one area of showers and thunderstorms over the Dakotas region and into western Iowa, which will move northeastward, and then an area of much more severe thunderstorms and showers down in Oklahoma and Texas, central Texas. That southern area will be moving southeastward. The northern area will be moving northeastward. So that thins it out a little bit in between. So the cold front's going to come through the Midwest on Saturday and Sunday, mostly through Iowa tonight and Friday, and then into Illinois and Indiana Friday night, Saturday. And on Sunday, things should be clearing out through the eastern Corn Belt. So we're not looking for much in the way of precipitation with this. Quarter to three-quarter of an inch amounts is what I'd expect out of that front as it comes through. So we're going to miss the brunt of it. Temperatures are going to stay well above normal through the period, right up until about next middle of next week, Wednesday or Thursday, and then it turns cooler. And looking a little farther ahead, we're seeing a return to colder, below normal temperatures again the following week. So we just really can't get spring jump started here. It seems to revert back to more winter-like conditions when we get into the following week.
Mm-hmm. That'll be hard on a lot of the crops that have been living through some awfully warm conditions coming out of dormancy. The trees, of course, leaving out. The grass is green.
Right.
But it's going to be rolled right back into cold temperatures, cold enough to do any damage?
Yeah, it might be for those crops that got off to a little bit of a rapid start. They got a little bit ahead of themselves into early bloom and the like. This could do some damage. This applies to things like fruit trees and other flowering plants. As far as the grains are concerned, I don't think we have a problem with this or the soybeans. They're not winter wheat is not far enough along where temperatures of this magnitude are going to affect them much.
All right. Anything else we should ask before we get going? Maybe you can check in on South America?
Yeah, we'll look at South America. Again, we've had showers in southern portions of the southern Brazil growing areas, which is really where the second corn crop is getting a good dose of rain. And there's some beans down there, and it's going to stay wet this coming week, and I think that's going to hamper some harvest activities as far as beans are concerned in southern portions of Brazil. But the newer land areas for the west central Brazil and northern parts of southern Brazil will be drier and not as showery, and so they'll move along okay. Not really bad. In the Argentine, a dry, warm week has been good for getting stuff matured and harvested, and we're going to see some showers in the northeast this week.
Pete, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure as well.
Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:50 for our first look at the agricultural markets with Dave Dickey. And remember to get ready to pledge your financial support to this radio station. Off to a great start with the Power Hour this morning, raising more than $70,000 in total. We're not done yet. Stay with us. On the Afternoon Magazine this afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.